Okay, close your eyes. When I play this, you see what? Of course, the elegantly warring teenagers from West Side Story. They are the legacy of choreographer Jerome Robbins, who also created the memorable dances in Fiddler on the Roof, Peter Pan, The King and I. But a new book makes the case that these populist pieces also kept Robbins from assuming his proper place in dance, that because he was regarded as one of the 20th century's most powerful storytellers, he was too lowbrow for the more abstract world of 20th century ballet. Second tier to George Balanchine, the great Russian-born choreographer and co-founder of the New York City Ballet, who hired a 31-year-old Robbins in 1949 to be that company's associate artistic director. Author Wendy Lesser says she's made it her vow, her sworn duty, to overturn the prevailing myth about Robbins. Her new book, Jerome Robbins, A Life in Dance, and she joins us now. Wendy Lesser, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Robin.
Just, you know, thinking of the West Side Story scenes that are now in our minds, you write a tidbit I hadn't heard that in the film version, these sharks and jets snapping their fingers are like above us. We're beneath them somehow. And that's because Jerome Robbins had trenches dug?
That's right. And if you go back and see the movie, and I have to say, although I love the ballets and I'm championing them in this book, I am not saying anything bad about West Side Story. It's a masterpiece. It's a great work. Mm-hmm. And so was Peter Pan. You know, he really was a genius in that field. It's just that because he was so good in that field, for the reasons you said, his ballets got the wrong sort or not enough attention.
Right.
Anyway, about the West Side Story filming, yes, he had trenches dug into the street. And you can actually go and see the movie again and see that you are lower than the dancers.
Right, they go over you. Fabulous. Well, So how did this all start? You were familiar with the ballet world, had certainly observed it, had written about it, and then you started writing this book for Yale University Press's Jewish Live series for the 100th centennial of Jerome Robbins' birth. Certainly knew about his works, as we all would know about West Side Story and The King and I. And then you're bowled over by something you didn't know about. I didn't either until you wrote about it. Jerome Robbins' 1971 ballet Goldberg Variations for the New York City Ballet, set to, of course, the music from Bach. Let's just listen to a little of the sound. Okay, so we will have all of the videos that we talk about here at hereandnow.org, but what are we seeing in this ballet? What did you see that really got you?
The thing is that I went to that program not ever having heard of a Goldberg Variations by Jerome Robbins. I didn't know he did a dance to it. And I went to see the West Side Story Suite, which was on the same program. And to my enormous surprise, Goldberg Variations turned out to be an incredible masterpiece, 80 minutes long, with a live pianist over on the side. Every kind of movement you could imagine, standard ballet, folk style, courtly, friendly, formal. It was just an amazing range of dance. It used 30 dancers in all, and it had the feeling of the music. I can't say anything better about a piece of dance than to say that it had the feeling of Bach's Goldberg Variation. And I loved it so much I went back the following week. And then I thought, something's going on here that I don't know about. I think of him as the West Side Story man, the Peter Pan man, the Fiddler on the Roof man. But really, if he can do a ballet like this, how many others could he have done?
Right. And you even spoke to friends who said, oh, yeah, I saw that back when it first came out. And I remember really loving it and then feeling a little bad about that.
That's right. That was the impression I got. And I couldn't figure out exactly why that would be, although I knew that Robbins had a reputation as being lower than Balanchine, who was the king, the saint of ballet. And I knew that a lot of people thought because he was a Broadway guy, he couldn't really do ballet, although Balanchine never thought that. But then I read Amanda Vales and Deborah Jowett's excellent biographies, two of them, and they both mentioned in relation to Goldberg Variations that Arlene Croce had panned it.
And
she was the most powerful dance critic and absolutely the most powerful ballet critic of her generation.
And you said you sat there stunned at the beauty of this piece for however many minutes. She called it 90 minutes of hard labor and also called Jerome Robbins a fretful, angry man. That was later. But you became, as you write, like a court-appointed lawyer. You were going to prove Robbins' worth as a ballet choreographer. And so let's take a listen to some of, again, the pieces, and we will have as much visual as we can at hearnow.org. Afternoon of a Faun, 1953, to the music of Debussy. We'll link you to the 1955 Canadian TV taping of it with the original ballerina Tanaquil Leclerc, Tanny, Robbins' muse and dear friend. And this is a year before she was paralyzed by polio. How is this a reimagining of the Afternoon of a Faun?
Well, I just love this dance, and it's only about 12 minutes long. You can watch it over and over, and it just feels wonderful every time. It's not just a reimagining of the music, but a reimagining of Nijinsky's version that he did in the very beginning of the 20th century. The Faun is the main character, and he has priestesses dancing around him and stuff, but he's practically a solo. Whereas Robbins imagined this as a duet, a wonderful duet, I think, where it's simultaneously about the ballet world. We're looking at two dancers in a studio, partly, and then it's also about a faun and his dream girl who comes and visits him. And with those two dancers, Tanaquil Leclerc and Jacques d'Amboise, it was a knockout.
And what are they? They're like, they're watching themselves in a practice mirror?
That's what it feels like, and we are the mirror. They're looking toward us out in the audience, but they seem to be looking in a mirror, as dancers sometimes do in a studio. So that there's this weird feeling of we're spying on them in a way. And Balanchine himself never took this superior attitude toward things that had a plot. Balanchine loved Dances at a Gathering, which Robbins made, and Balanchine said it was so great, he should make more. It's like popcorn, he said. Like you could eat it, the whole thing, endlessly.
Oh, popcorn, that's probably drove others, you know, off the cliff. But let's listen to a little of Dances at a Gathering. This is the dance Robbins created to Chopin music in 1969. He had been away from the New York City Ballet doing choreography for Broadway. But this, Dances at a Gathering, was an instant hit. Let's listen to a little of it. What do we see in this dance?
Dances at a Gathering starts with a young man alone on stage and sort of ends up with him touching the stage after many, many minutes. It's quite a long ballet of all the dancers coming in and joining him, and they all get to strut their stuff and they combine in many different ways. But the idea is they are dancers hanging out together. And so one of the things Jerome Robbins did is have them stand at the side watching each other as others are dancing. It's again like Afternoon of a Faun, a combination of a work that's meant for us and that it's meant to have a real worldly reality and a work that talks about itself being on the stage.
You talk about his childhood, which was difficult, fraught relationship with his mother, and he became difficult. There's a famous in dance circle story about him backing up on stage during rehearsal. You know, he has his back to the audience. The company's in front of him. He's backing up, and no one tells him that he's coming at the edge, and he falls into the orchestra pit, and no one comes to help him.
Right.
He, you know, could be cruel.
Yes, and a lot of people talk about his cruelty, and there are many, many stories about how difficult he was, and not just to the dancers, to Leonard Bernstein, for instance, when they were rehearsing West Side Story in Washington in a theater, and Leonard Bernstein was sitting there near the front of the theater listening to them play his music, and Robbins comes tearing down the aisle and says to the orchestra, cut out that Hollywood crap, and basically reworks the music with Bernstein in the room. Bernstein was so upset he had to leave. He went to a bar across the street. So Robbins was not a nice guy to a lot of people, But the dancers that loved him still love him. I've talked to some of them, and I kind of felt writing the book, I came to love the ballet so much that I loved him too. Not his person, because I never met him, but I wanted people to finish the book feeling this, in some ways, was a pretty great guy with very deep feelings and an enormous intelligence, even if he did a lot of unpleasant things.
Well, and they included, by the way, naming names to Joseph McCarthy's House Un-American Affairs Committee, the communist witch hunt of the 1950s. He did it because he was afraid of being outed as being gay, and he struggled over that he had done that.
He did. He felt guilty about it for decades, but it still was a pretty bad thing to do. And many of my friends reading this book in its draft version said, I didn't know if I could ever forgive him for that testimony, but you kind of won me over, you know.
There's much to like when you read. Wendy Lesser, author of the new book, Jerome Robbins, A Life in Dance. Wendy, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And you're listening to Here and Now.